the first answers when I said, well, because I love the environment, but I can't find a job that pays me well enough. That wasn't good enough for companies. They needed to hear something else. So I shifted it.
This is The Butterfly Effect, a podcast that shows the big impact a small action can do. Tali Orad is talking to those special people that make a difference with nature and trees.
Welcome everyone to The Butterfly Effect. My name is Tali Orad. I'm your host and your butterfly here. My special guest today is Abby Alvin. Abby is a big lover of everything outdoors who loves hiking and photography. She went to school for environmental studies, geology, and entrepreneurship. And when she graduated, she was unable to find a job in the climate sector that would pay rent, so she pursued 7 years in recruiting. Here we are, 10 years later, and she has been able to bring her skill set in recruiting and her passion for climate together as a senior climate tech account manager at Climate People, where the mission is simple: to get more top talent into climate jobs. Welcome, Abby, to The Butterfly Effect.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here. I'm honored to be speaking with you.
What a very interesting career path. You went to school for environmental studies and did a full 180 to become a recruiter. Is this a common thing?
No, to answer first off, I don't think it's very common. Definitely not. I do think, though, that the background at the time, the environmental studies with geology, and then plus, you know, add in some entrepreneurship, actually, funny enough, got me some interviews I might have not gotten otherwise, because it was an interesting background to a lot of companies. But I had no idea, you know, what I wanted to do at the time. And so, yeah, when I pursued the recruiting role, you know, they asked me, well, why is it that you want to be, you know, in sales if you had studied environmental sciences? And I was like, well, you know, I kind of just did something that got me outside and made me happy and that I was excited to learn about. And now I'm coming here to kind of learn about the business space and, you know, see how I can make impact here. And that was, you know, my answer, because the first answers when I said, well, because I love the environment, but I can't find a job that pays me well enough, that wasn't good enough for companies. They needed to hear something else. So I shifted it.
And what did you learn through the process?
I learned a lot. One is it's not bad to you know, put yourself in a role that isn't what you imagined originally. I think that every job that we take and every, you know, experience we have, you know, leads you to your next step and allows you to grow and become another version of yourself, or you know, figure out what you don't like and what you want to pursue moving forward. And I am so grateful for the opportunity that I did take. I never had expected I would be in sales. My parents actually were both in sales when I was younger, and everyone, all of their friends were, oh, Abby Alvin's going to be in sales one day like her parents. She loves to talk and she's good with, you know, us parents. And I wanted nothing other than to be different than them, right? And then here I was after college pursuing that career path. And it was so great to me. I had wonderful leaders and mentors, and, you know, I learned to be a professional and work with levels, you know, with managers, VPs, CEOs, at, you know, the age of 22, which is kind of an experience you don't get in many industries. So I learned that we also have so many lives throughout our life, if we're fortunate to, you know, live long, and you can always make shifts in your career and pursue different passions.
And did you have a chance to apply any of the things you learned in terms of the environment in that path?
I did not at first. And then I started to question, you know, things that we had in the office. So like styrofoam cups, you know, why are we using styrofoam cups in 50 offices nationwide? These are terrible for the environment, right? And I started putting those questions out there. Actually, at the time that I left at the beginning of 2020, I would say that's when progress was finally starting to be made in that field. And I know that at least that original, you know, company that I was with, that they have a sustainability, you know, impact leader now, which is so great to see. And there are a lot of efforts that are being made in terms of, you know, their carbon footprint and how they can be better and partner with nonprofits in space. So I think those initial conversations, because I was really, you know, fortunate to be close with my CEO, who was made CEO 3 years after my start in the career, and I could call him and question why we were doing this and that. So I did find a way to kind of put my edge in there, but I also stayed relevant with, you know, things I care about outside of work and, you know, volunteer opportunities and yeah, that's really the extent of it. I didn't get to very much. No.
Okay. And what about your classmates, by the way? Were they able to get careers in environmental?
So a lot of them actually, because it was mainly geology was the larger portion of it. And the option was really to go to, you know, an oil company. And at that point, again, there weren't many sustainable efforts at these oil companies. Maybe they were just beginning, but nothing that we had been exposed to. So I feel like my classmates, really the option was to go do that or to, you know, work for maybe a nonprofit. And that was, it was tough, you know? And a lot of my classmates that I've actually now reconnected with randomly on different paths of life, they all are, if they're not in the environmental space or climate space, they are pursuing mission oriented jobs or traveling the world and learning it themselves, which I think is really interesting because I think we all kind of shared that unique drive of wanting to pursue a career or something in life that meant something to us.
Interesting. Yeah. What advice would you give to someone that is kind of like picking a career path now or picking a major?
I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to know, especially in the United States, to know what exactly we want to do. I mean, I could go on and I won't, I'll spare you because, you know, we want to stay on the climate topic. But when it comes to education, I think that not, you know, everyone is ready to go to school right after they graduate high school because, you know, it's really expensive. And if you're going to go, you kind of want to make the most of the dollars that you're spending to get this incredible experience for, you know, to for an education. Like right now, if I were to be able to go back, I would remember so much more than I did back then because I'd be excited to learn, you know, and have that opportunity to approach something I really was interested in. I'm lucky enough to say I actually did choose something I was interested in, but I'll tell you the truth. I switched majors 4 times before I actually landed on something I loved. And I truly picked it because I asked myself, what will I enjoy doing? You know, I noticed I wasn't a student that was good at just sitting still and taking tests. I wanted to be out in the field and learning and doing labs and research. And so I guess, you know, my advice would be is do something that make, if you know, if you have that pressure to go to school right after high school, then you know, choose something that makes you feel good, something that keeps you alert and awake in class. Don't, I mean, you know, some people are more motivated by money. I think that money can come in any career as long as you, you know, climb the ladder. It doesn't have to be making $1 million right out of college because, by the way, that doesn't happen. But, you know, really pursue something that's fulfilling with professors that inspire you and that can mentor and lead you down right paths and that you can hopefully keep in your court. You know, I would definitely say it's really nice to form that network at a young age and have, you know, these professors have incredible backgrounds that you know, might not really, you know, recognize at the time, but keep in touch with them. And there is a lot going on right now in the world. There's a lot of, you know, mission-oriented work that can take the, you know, forefront of your mind on any given day. But I think that climate, for those who are interested and have thought about it, is a really cool space to pursue. It's a really great degree. If you can get into it, even in like, you know, with a minor in entrepreneurship or a co-major in entrepreneurship, it could be a really cool matchup because there's so many cool initiatives that are happening right now to get into right out of school.
Okay. So before we dive into that, let's talk a little bit about Climate People. What is it?
We are a recruiting firm and we specialize in taking talent and bringing them into the climate sector. We really, you know, we recognize that there is a gap. We have a lot of clients that are brilliant and are creating incredible solutions to our climate crisis, and they need talent to complete this mission and to pursue it and make the impact. And so we also find on the other side, there's all of this talent that cares about the environment. They love nature. They feel inspired by it, and they want to get into this mission-oriented job, and specifically within climate or climate tech, and they don't know how to do that. And so we've found that over and over and again when we talk to candidates. So we're trying to bridge that gap and bring together, you know, both these candidates that don't know how to get into climate, and then clients that don't know how to find the right talent. And it's super fun. It's extremely rewarding every time we are able to, you know, get a new hire for one of our clients, we celebrate, and we're extremely excited because we're one step closer to helping solve our climate crisis. And it's really great to, you know, to see on both sides how excited the client is, and then how excited our candidates are as well. And we are, you know, we really try to preach that, I guess not preach isn't the right word, it's an intimidating word sometimes. We really try to educate everyone we do speak to, or all resumes we see come through, that, you know, every skill set transfers over to the climate sector, right? Every company needs marketing, finance, maybe mechanical and electrical, potentially if you have a product that needs it. You know, you mm-hmm. most will need a web application, or web app, excuse me, right? And you need software developers. So anything that you, I did not mention obviously that, but anything you can think of, it does transfer over to the climate sector. And we're here to help you, you know, down that path and explain how, you know, we can make that happen for you. And also, back to the point we originally started at, there is money here now, right? I wasn't able to pursue it then, but now there's so much money being thrown at these companies through funding rounds, which is incredible to see. And, you know, you can get a job that pays you what you need to make to be able to live your life comfortably. And there's a lot of great startups you can even get equity in. So it's really a win-win on all accounts.
So what are the barriers?
A lot of people are hesitant to leave their jobs, right? If we are pursuing someone that, you know, looks like they are top talent at, let's say, you know, big names, small names, whatever company mm-hmm. it's from, if they're happy in their role, with any role, right? You're hesitant to leave. But then also the climate sector is new and it's still growing. And being unsure, it really takes us to have strong internal candidates that can, you know, assure them that this is a good path for them to pursue. And we only do it, you know, and work with clients that we are confident in. And you know, the fundraising dollars speak for themselves, and these leaders speak for themselves. They are all truly brilliant, and it's really special to be part of.
And what is the area that most people are needed?
So we specifically focus a lot on climate tech. So mm-hmm. Tech positions are big, and then with our larger companies that have more of like a product that, you know, they need mechanical and electrical engineers and scientists and chemists. Those are probably the largest spaces, but, you know, we do see a lot of product managers, which does in our mind fall under tech, and marketing, right? And eventually a lot of these teams are going to need salespeople. It's just kind of that, you know, a lot of them are at that forefront of just launching or getting their product in place, and sales will come next. And, you know, there's that shift for you salespeople out there to get here. It's going to be huge selling it's still corporate, right? You can stay corporate. You can sell, you know, carbon credits to big companies. You can sell, you know, these new solutions to large companies and educate them and help them make a bigger impact internally for their companies. So
I'm curious, you mentioned your classmates that went to oil companies at the beginning, and all those polluting jobs are now getting less and less people that want to work there. I'm just curious what you think.
Those larger companies are having a lot of trouble. I actually have a good friend that worked works, you know, at one of the top gas companies. I guess I don't need to name names of the company here, but you know, originally when I said, what is the work that you're doing and why don't you, I guess this is bias of me, don't you feel terrible about what you're doing every single day, right? I challenged him often, and the work was really exciting to him because it was, you know, large business development and working on different ways of transporting their oil and all their product and, you know, worldwide, and he got to travel a lot with them internationally. So that is a cool opportunity, but what you're doing ultimately at the end of the day is not great, right, for our planet. And so it's funny to see, I'm just giving this example because now here we are, this 3 years later from that initial conversation, and he's fully working on a sustainability team, and that's their future. They can't keep up the way that they were originally going, and I find it so fascinating. And he's made a complete, you know, 180 as well in terms of his beliefs and what's important and his whole strategy. So I found that example to be really neat, just to, you know, kind of speak to that industry. And my other, you know, classmates, they definitely did not stay in that space. I think it was just the only opportunity that they had at that time. And they felt like they needed to, you know, there's also pressure from your family too, to pursue a path in what you just got your degree in, because, you know, there are students out there that are fortunate to have their parents or someone in their family or, you know, paying for their education, and they would be disappointed to see their child not use their education in that space. So I think, you know, there might've been that pressure initially, but a lot of these people have not lost it in that industry and have moved along.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to be a little blunt here, and I apologize, or not. So your role is to get more top talent into climate job, but you failed yourself, right? You ended up going to something completely different. So I'm just curious, how do you explain it to candidate you tried to bring in, and why is this time any different?
Yeah, great question. I love it. I love when people are blunt. So I think there's two pieces to that. I first of all, we're in a very different time. Even though that was only 10 years ago, it wasn't even a blip on the radar. Like when I was telling classmates that climate change was real, I don't have stats on it, but how many people didn't believe in it? And I remember having, you know, friends, it's cool, right? In college, we were talking about this stuff and bigger things that we were learning in class. And I would talk to my friends in business school and international studies and, you know, in psychology, and they were like, oh, climate change isn't real. No, this isn't the thing. And it was so frustrating. So to kind of like, you know, to give light to what that was just at a university. So in the corporate space as well, there wasn't any attention on it, right? I didn't have the confidence as a, what are you, 22-year-old when you graduate from college to go start my own company quite yet, or mm-hmm. let's say like nonprofit at that time. I believe most efforts were just nonprofit. And again, not to say that there were no companies out there. It just was, they weren't hiring like junior people either. It wasn't, you know, these large climate focused companies that could have interns or new college grads as part of their, you know, line of business. It just wasn't available. Now it is. Now these companies are emerging, and I will say it's probably harder as a junior candidate to get into a startup like this right away, because startups do need talent to come in, because there's not much time, right? You're spread so thin to educate and to train. But these companies are growing so quickly and they're scaling so fast that it's very soon in our future that we'll see more of these programs. And what I do, I know you're right. You're like, this is kind of contradictory to what you did. I share that story with my candidates. You know, I share, I'm like, guess what? But you have hope. I tried and I couldn't find it. I literally wouldn't have been able to pay rent, right? At any of the jobs, not even close. And so I share and I'm honest. I'm like, this is so cool. I wish, you know, in ways that I was able to start over at this time and begin my career there. But I obviously don't really mean that. I feel very fortunate to have the experience I had and now come and make really big impact and bring, like I said, my skill set and my passion together. And I see that every single day, just in my motivation and my work ethic and my energy and excitement. I'm helping actually restructure us internally so we can make, you know, even bigger impact at a higher scale, which is exciting. And I hope to hire in a lot of new graduates in the next coming year and start kind of I guess it's not going to be an internship, but more of a new grad program that we're training new grads to be recruiters and, you know, in the climate space. So mm-hmm. I'm trying to practice what we preach as well, like get into climate if you can. And so if we're going to do that, we need to have those jobs available as well and put in the time, even if it's extra hours, right? That may not be ideal, but to really fight the good fight.
I love it.
And again, like I said, every job we get someone is the next step to helping solve the climate crisis.
Yes, love it, love it. Okay, so how can people get into the climate sector?
They can call climate people. talk to us.
Besides that.
Yes, good point. You know, LinkedIn is a really great tool. I know that a lot of us are inundated by a lot of messaging, but use LinkedIn to your you know, advantage. Look to see if there are companies that you're interested in. Look to see if you have connections right there. If you see anyone that knows at a second, third, whatever, first, second, your connection, like make sure that you ask someone and to go on a whim and be like, hey, could you introduce me to that person? I'm really interested in this company. Or just simply connect and message someone and say, I'm really interested. Or don't be afraid to be different, right? If you see a company email or a company phone number, call and say, I applied for this job and I'm really interested, and right, and ask to talk to HR or to recruiting or to whoever you think the hiring manager may be based on the job description. Because you can look and, you know, up a company in LinkedIn, you can see the people that work there. So that's one method, right? To getting creative. Don't feel bad to be pushy. Go fight for yourself, advocate for yourself. So I'll start with that one because I didn't want to just start with climate people, but really, you know,
yeah, it's very generic. Yes,
it is. But, but if you can come to climate people, we're working really hard to, you know, at the same time as recruiting, but to also be giving resources to those who, you know, want to get into the sector and maybe we don't have available jobs from at this time. We're trying to come up with resources and other ways to mend that gap. And, you know, Project Drawdown, they do a lot of work in this too. They have incredible resources that you can always, you know, access to. And they kind of break it down by job title and industry. And they do a great job of illustrating that everyone, literally everyone, can get into climate. It's just, you know, you need to research your path to getting there and finding a company that you care about, right? So it's out there. There's more coming. And I think that, you know, we're trying to do it as quick as possible, but also, as you know, we want to be extremely careful to make sure that we don't, you know, rush. We want to have really strong material, right? We want it to be quality. So I think there's a lot of education, you know, that's coming in that space. And don't be hesitant to work with recruiting firms in general that, you know, focus on the environmental sector. They are there advocating for you. I think that there's oftentimes maybe negative connotation. I don't really know. But with recruiting, because, you know, all these recruiting firms exist and they might reach out to you and try, you know, to contact you all the time, especially if you have your resume on certain, you know, career websites, but they are advocates for you. They are trying to get you jobs, and there's no service fee, right? As a candidate, you don't pay anything to be able to work with an agent. So an agency. Yeah. So it's free.
This is one aspect, right? To look for a job that is in the environmental sector. You can also, there are a lot of candidates that not necessarily go there, but care that their employees are caring for the environment. Is there a way for a candidate to know that, to check?
ESG, environmental social governance, right, is a huge focus right now for a lot of, for every company, it should be. Mm-hmm. And so companies are beginning to focus on this environmental piece, absolutely. So that should be a standard in general. But going to that next level of your question, how do you find that out? If it's not on your website as a company, to me, that shows that it's not something that's on the forefront of their mission and what they're doing. It should be something that they are advertising because they're proud of the work that they're doing. They want to spread the message that it's so important to do and inspire mm-hmm. other companies to do it, to get their employees stoked about it, right? And fired up that we're doing this really cool work. Like, join our team. Like, we want to help with the climate crisis. You know, we might not be a climate company, but we are in our core, in our hearts, right? We are focused on these missions. So, you know, that's kind of a really important piece to the puzzle. I know that you could look at it the other way and say a company might just do it to have it for PR and marketing purposes, but I think it's you should be sharing that information. It's exciting, right? And it definitely attracts great talent too, if you're practicing yeah. what you preach. So and asking about it in interviews, right? Asking right off the bat, are there any questions that you have? Anytime that you're in an interview, they always ask that in the end. And it's okay to say, beyond actual questions about the work, day-to-day work, and just say, hey, climate is really important to me, or a company that's very socially conscious is really important to me. Is this something that you all focus on? Do you have any sustainability efforts? I think that's, you know, a buzzword internally for most companies, having like a sustainable impact officer or impact officer just in general, it might fall into the same space. You know, a lot of companies have ESG consultants now. So you just asking about those efforts is important.
I love those tips. So your love of nature also comes across in hiking and taking pictures. Do you mind sharing?
My sister and I were both big, big, big hikers, and we love photography also, the two of us together. But growing up, it wasn't something that we were super exposed to. Well, this is a funny story. There were a bunch of girls in my neighborhood that were my grade and my age, and then there weren't really any boys in my neighborhood at the time that were my age, but there were a few that were younger and a couple that were older. And I was always outside, you know, this is back then, not to say boys versus girls or indoorsy or outdoorsy, but I was this, you know, I was this young girl. I think I was maybe 5 to 7 years old, let's say. And I was always outside hunting for salamanders and digging through dirt with all the boys in the neighborhood and playing tag and hiding in trees. And my, you know, I asked my mom and I said, "Mom, why am I not an indoor girl?" And I was like, "All of the other girls are inside and play with dolls, but why am I an indoor girl? Or why am I not an indoor girl? Why am I an outdoor girl?" And she said it was the cutest question, because I just like didn't know if I belonged or if I, you know, or why I was so different. But I think it was very apparent, you know, clearly from day one that I loved nature. I had salamanders, you know, in my little net all the time, and I would be playing, you know, and I'd come in with filthy every single evening. And so that's kind of where it began. And then from there, I always had this, funny enough, this vision to hike Mount Kilimanjaro, which my sister and I have accomplished together. And we have kind of set these goals to do really, you know, incredible hikes all over the world together, as we try to do one every other year. And she is a photographer and has brought that love of photography to me. And so it's kind of something that we do together. There's a lot that adds up to why I love nature so much, but I really, really enjoy just being out. You know, I feel very fortunate for a lot of the hikes that I've, you know, been on in my life. I've really had, you know, not too much traffic and, you know, spots where I just have stretches of miles and miles, you know, to myself or to my sister and I and the group that we're with. And that's a really special feeling.
I'm sure you've seen so many trees while you were hiking. I'm just curious, what is your favorite tree?
Growing up, my grandmother lived in the town next door and worked in the other town next door. So to get to her home, she would come by us. So she would stop in a few times a week. And I think she had quarters from maybe paying the meter, the parking meter. I'm not actually sure, but she'd always bring these quarters, and we would sit on the front stoop and we'd count out the quarters, and we'd walk out to my front yard, right on the sidewalk. There was this really, really tall maple, and it had a formation on it that it looked like a window. It was almost this imprint on it. And so at that point, when I was really little, I couldn't reach it. And so my grandmother would pick me up and I would knock on the window and say, "Excuse me, Mr. Ice Cream Man, you know, can I have an orange sherbet with chocolate sprinkles in a cone?" And I would, you know, fake pay him my quarter and or quarters. And then I'd order my grandmother one too. And we'd walk back to the stoop and sit there and stare at the trees and eat our ice cream for, I don't know, hours a week, honestly. It was, so I really think that must have been my original exposure to trees. And then for some reason growing up, I had this fascination with palm trees. And so my parents got me one, and I would go outside in the summer and tan with my little palm tree next to me in the front yard. By the way, this is in Boston, Massachusetts. So it's not warm or the climate's not appropriate for there in any means. And, you know, and I find myself, I admire trees a lot on all of my adventures. But more recently, I've been fortunate to spend a lot of my time in Maui. And there are two trees, the rainbow eucalyptus, that is the most stunning tree. It literally looks like a painted tree, but it's all natural. They're really indigenous to the northern hemisphere. I know they're found in the Philippines and New Guinea and Indonesia often, but they're in tropical, you know, forests that get a lot of rain. And it's the only eucalyptus tree that does grow in the rainforest. And it's beautiful. It feels fake. So, you know, go Google rainbow eucalyptus if you've never seen one. It's you know, it's stunning.
Yes, and then, it is beautiful. Yeah.
There's banyan trees. There's a lot here. And I just kind of like the metaphor. I was on a long hike with one of my friends out here, and we were talking about life, right? And we somehow banyan trees came up, and I like the metaphor in terms of my mind that, and I try to emulate that, it's really, you know, it's well grounded and it spreads its roots out in so many directions. You'll come across a banyan tree, and there's one in specific that, you know, sticks out in my mind that is in Lahaina, a town here on Maui, and it looks like, you know, the roots come out in all different areas and in this one park, and you think it's, you know, 15 different trees, but it's all the same one. And so I like that, you know, metaphor of being well grounded and spreading your roots out, and, you know, being a citizen in the world to many in different directions and types of people and walks of life. So I'd say that, you know, right now, that those are probably my two favorite trees.
Love it. Love it. And I love your love to nature. And I wanted to thank you for sharing your journey with us and helping others switch to work in climate.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. And, you know, for anyone out there that's listening to this, you know, get in climate. Even if it's not something you've ever considered, that's okay. It doesn't matter. We can help you become passionate about it. We can help you learn about the sector and the space. We want that, you know. Part of the mission behind all these companies that are, you know, mission oriented and creating these incredible solutions to our climate crisis is that they want to also bring folks in that aren't really aware of what's going on and have them be part of that, you know, solution, mm-hmm. and grow their love for our climate crisis too. Cause that's, you know, the more awareness and knowledge and passion that we spread, the better, you know, we'll be at the end of it all. So, please, yeah. you know, consider it as a sector. It's really, really cool space to be in, and reach out to climate people if you want to figure out, you know, how to make your first step in that direction. And yeah, Tali, thank you for educating, you know, us on all different walks of life. Your podcast is really inspirational, and I know you spend a lot of your time outside of your day-to-day, you know, job doing this, and it really doesn't go unnoticed. I had a really great time scrolling through all the incredible people that you've interviewed, and keep up the good fight. You're an inspiration to a lot of us.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And thank you everyone for joining me today. We are all beautiful butterflies, each in his and her individual ways. I wanted to thank you for joining me today in this episode. I really appreciate you coming on this journey with me, and I hope you can join me next time. And remember, it only takes a small action to make a big difference. Be a butterfly.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. Please subscribe to hear more of our stories of change.